Hello there again, SEC fans. Welcome into That SEC Podcast, also known as Your SEC Podcast. This is episode number 11. I am Cody McClure. I'm joined, as always, by Michael Bratton, SEC Mike. Mike, we'll just get started here with the weekend we just had. I mean, this was nuts, right? Where do we start here in week three?
Well, for me, it starts with Tennessee and Florida. That's a game Tennessee fans always have circled on their calendar. You know, I think we both kind of had Florida going into that game. We thought they would win, and it doesn't matter, you know, how many things they have in their favor. Just with this Florida game, there's just always something. I thought it would be about a four-point game. I predicted 24-20. It ended up being 26-20, so I was really close, but still, regardless of how much I expected that going in, it was just an unexpected way to get there, and it was like a punch to the gut. I don't know how it felt for you, but I like to call it the fail Mary for Tennessee. That's the perfect way to describe the ending of that game.
Yeah, it is the perfect way to describe it, because Tennessee, it was one of those games where I think Tennessee lost the game, and that's not to take anything away from Florida. But, you know, Tennessee had two trips down to inside the 10-yard line. One time they're at the 1-yard line going in on Florida, and it's like, you know, if Tennessee just converts there, you run the ball with John Kelly once or twice, even if you score 10 points there instead of three, I mean, we're talking about a trip to the red zone there two times, getting 3 points out of the deal. You know, Florida's offense, I don't think, was going to come back on you had you been able to put in one of those touchdowns. So Tennessee really, I thought, shot itself in the foot with offensive play calling, missed field goals, a lot of different things. But sometimes that's the way football games work out. And Tennessee still had a chance to take the game to overtime, which was totally shocking to me. I thought Florida pretty much had it wrapped up in the fourth quarter. And then that play, Mike, I mean, that 63-yard bomb, I mean, it was insane. I don't even, you know, McElwain said after the game that he had called the same play as the year before, or mm-hmm. two years ago down there. But it almost looked to me like it was just totally unplanned, you know. It was just a prayer.
Yeah, I mean, I also heard Felipe Franks talking about he nearly took off and tried to run for it. I don't know what he would be thinking with that one, because he wasn't going to run for a touchdown by any means. But, you know, just however you think, you know, just the most crushing way a team can lose, Tennessee just keeps finding new ways. And, you know, this game felt very similar to Georgia Tech with the big comeback. If it's kind of felt a little bit like Virginia Tech last year, Florida, Georgia, Texas A&M. For whatever reason, this team just, they get behind big. They don't give up, but, you know, you credit them for that, but they just have to stop getting down in these deficits. And, you know, at some point you have to wonder what is causing that, and something has to change. Everyone's pointing the finger at Butch Jones. I think there's a lot of reasons that's valid today, but you know, there's still a lot of season left to go, and I don't think that, you know, one loss essentially on one play is cause to just kind of throw away the season, as I've seen a lot of Tennessee fans suggest today.
Yeah, well, Tennessee fans are they were very reactionary yesterday, and look, I understand it. I mean, Butch, it was terrible. The fact that you have John Kelly, who's leading the SEC in rushing right now, seven plays down there, and you don't do anything with it. You throw every time. I think it was terrible play calling, but at the same time, it comes down to execution too. So I'm not going to jump on the Fire Butch train right now, because had things been executed better, even if you hit a couple of those field goals, I mean, was it Josh Palmer? You catch a touchdown pass. Like, it's easy to point out play calling as being the problem there, because you look at the part that was obvious and it sucked. But execution, we're having a different conversation. So Anyway, Tennessee, Florida, it was wild. Mike, let's move over to Starkville, because the Mississippi State LSU game, the way it turned out, that totally didn't surprise anybody at all, right? Like, everybody expected that. Mississippi State's going to just, yeah, they'll win by 30, I'm sure.
You know, this was a game that a lot of educated people, I think, going into, you know, you kind of just naturally lean to LSU. You know, they've got, you know, a little bit better perceived athletes, maybe a little bit better coaching, obviously not at the head coaching position, but at the coordinator positions. So it was kind of easy to see LSU winning this game. A lot of people had Mississippi State I know you've had them as a dark horse. A lot of people said they could contend in this game. But I think the most shocking thing is just Mississippi State scoring 37 points on that LSU defense. That, I mean, Mississippi State winning the game is not a shock. Them scoring 37, that's a shock to me. And, I mean, they were just unable to stop Mississippi State. Nick Fitzgerald, you know, he was just awesome. And he deserves to be in the Heisman race, I think, after that performance.
Well, I mean, not only the scoring, the 37, too, but how about State's defense and Todd Grantham holding LSU to 7? And yeah, you're right, though, about the offensive performance. I mean, they just gashed LSU. What was it, 286 rushing yards or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Most LSU's given up in 2 years. And it was just an all-around dominant performance by Mississippi State. And I don't want to say I was glad to see it, because, you know, I try to stay fairly unbiased.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I have something against LSU. But I was glad to see Mississippi State finally get some respect that I think has been well-deserved. Like I told you all along, I thought this was going to be a pretty good football team this season.
And I think their test next week against Georgia will tell us a lot more about their defense, because, you know, you noted, you know, they did shut down LSU, so you got to give them credit for that. But I really think LSU's lacking a lot of talent on that side of the ball. They may have the best offensive player, at least for the running back position, in Darius Geis. You know, everybody knows about him. DJ Chark's an excellent receiver. But outside of those two, I don't think they have much on the to provide on the offensive side. You know, Danny Etling, he looked great against Chattanooga, and he looked pretty good against BYU. But I mean, those teams are, from what we've seen, are terrible. So, you know, they flipped over a 5-star safety to made him a receiver already. So I think there's some serious issues with LSU's offense. So I'm not quite ready to give Mississippi State the credit you are on defense, but I mean, it was definitely impressive. And like I said, next week I think will give us a better indication of just how good that defense is.
Yeah, if they go on the road and beat Georgia, I think this team, people are going to really start taking Mississippi State seriously at that point, if they're not already. So, and of course, we're going to talk about that game a little bit on this episode, because we'll get into some of these week four lines in just a few minutes. But anything else from week three, any other teams you would be interested in talking about?
Yeah, Kentucky really opened my eyes, particularly on defense. You know, Debo Samuel got hurt for South Carolina, and that was a big moment in that game. But even leading up to that, South Carolina only had 6 points in the game. They only scored 13 total. And just time and time again, Kentucky defense came up. They just came up strong. I believe they stopped South Carolina on three fourth down situations, and one of them was fourth and goal from the 1 yard line. And they manned up. That's something that, you know, Kentucky's never been known as a tough team. I think they've always been known as a softer team, that when they go up against a physical team, you know, they just can't handle it. But so far, I mean, they look really good in the trenches. I don't know. I'll be really curious to see what they can do against Florida this upcoming week. But, you know, they opened my eyes a little bit with their toughness.
Yeah, not going to lie, I did not see that one coming from a mile away. Like, one of my betting guarantees this week was that South Carolina would cover 6.5. Just the momentum trending into that game, South Carolina's first home game of the season, they appeared to be red hot, totally destroyed Missouri. They beat NC State. Kentucky comes in kind of like, oh, well, they had to really earn it against Southern Miss and Eastern Kentucky. But then what do you know? It just college football happened, right? I
Yeah,
mean,
I just got done rewatching that game. I like to go back and watch all the SEC games, you know, Sundays and Mondays and whatnot. But
oh, yeah.
South Carolina opened the game first play, scored a touchdown, and on the following Kentucky possession, they threw an interception. Like they just had all the momentum, 6-0. They missed the extra point, but despite all that South Carolina had going for them, Kentucky still just denied them. So I that was even more impressive than almost anything, is just walking into that situation and being unfazed by just getting hit right in the beginning.
And also now Mark Stoops is 4-1 against South Carolina. He's won four in a row as a head coach. Only loss was in his first season there in Columbia. So Gamecocks just they don't beat Mark Stoops. That's the way it goes. So I didn't realize that until this morning that Kentucky they have won four in a row against South Carolina. So pretty impressive. Good win for Kentucky. A couple of other notes from the weekend before we get into these betting lines. Auburn, I was really, I don't know if you've had a chance to go back and look at the Auburn game, but you know, they won that game over Mercer 24 to 10, and Auburn had 510 yards of offense, only scored 24 points. Auburn had five fumbles in that game, lost four of them. And if you look at the stat lines, I mean, Jarrett Stidham was like 32 of 37, completed 86% of his passes. Cameron Petway was fantastic on the ground, but they just could not hang on to the ball. And so, for people who maybe didn't see that game, that's why it was close. Auburn could never punch it in the end zone, but they still, that their offense ran all over Mercer.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's actually one game that I've yet to really dig into. So, because I'm curious, you know, you mentioned already the opening lines. Let's go ahead and start with that Auburn one because that they're traveling to Missouri this week, and I've seen a lot of people online are really confused by that line. So let's see, Auburn traveling to Missouri. You thought it would be Auburn by 14.5 would be the spread. I said Auburn 8.5, and that opened at Auburn. Let's see, Auburn at 16.5 is what that opened by, so significantly more than I thought. But you were only 2 points off there, so clearly, you know, I think you saw what you were looking for there with the lost fumbles and everything.
I was just intrigued by that game because I didn't know why it was so close, and I had a feeling it had to be like Auburn had to turn it over a bunch or something. So I dug into that one a little bit, but yeah, I just, you know, I thought it would be a little more than you did because of the fact that Missouri is coming off. That's another thing. I mean, 35 to 3. This is an offense that we thought in week one, and I love it because we always do this every year, right? Like it's always overreactionary. And that offense put up 815 yards in week one against whoever, Missouri State. And now you get a field goal against Purdue.
Yeah, I mean that's embarrassing. I mean at this point, you know, from everything I've been told, Barry Odom has a very long leash there in Missouri, but I just don't know. I think, you know, I think we've mentioned this in a previous podcast, these SEC programs, you know, they're so vital to their institutions. They generate so much money. I think, you know, if he hasn't, they won four games last year. If they win four or less this year, I think you gotta fire that guy and just bring in somebody that can show some progress. Because you just can't have this. I mean, they're non-competitive. I mean, you know, South Carolina,
Terrible.
they were okay during the first quarter of South Carolina, but then it was the same deal. They just got blown their doors off. Their defense was pathetic against Missouri State, and that's what this coach is supposed to be, a defensive guy. Yeah, if they lose this one by as much as the spread suggests, with nearly three touchdowns at home, I mean, I don't know. It's clearly going to be a very long season in Columbia.
Long season in store for Mizzou, indeed, I think. So the line on that one was 16, 16 or 16 and a half?
18 at, oh wait, yeah, I'm sorry, 16 and a half.
16 and a half. Okay. And then I had it at 14 and a half. So I was fairly close on that one. I like to do this. I like the way that we do this because I just canceled out. Like, you surprise me with every one. So I don't even go look at them because I look forward to you telling me what they were and how close we were. So let's move on to the second one.
Okay, I've got a lot of negative attention on Twitter for this one. UMass at Tennessee. You know, we've already went well into what Tennessee just experienced. You thought that they would be a 3-touchdown favorite at -21. I said -20, and that opened at -27. So you were a bit closer, but generally the reaction I've gotten from Tennessee fans on Twitter is they just don't give a damn at this point.
Yeah, Tennessee fans on Twitter are some of the, well, I don't want to talk too bad about them because I have to react, I have to interact with a lot of them, but you know how they are.
I appreciate people that they care so little that they have to tell me how much they care. Like I feel like if they just ignored me, I think that would be a better solution to them not caring. But it's funny that you mentioned Tennessee fans because just before we jumped on the podcast here, I shared a tweet with some of the people that we work with at Saturday Down South. The new AD John Curry is at a soccer game, and he tweeted out, "You know, I'm a great crowd at the Regal Stadium." I shared that with everyone at work, and I said, "This post is irrelevant to us. You know, we just cover SEC football clearly." But I said, "Give it 20 minutes and just wait and see the reactions from Tennessee fans." And I've gone back to this, and I want to read a couple of these to you. The very first one was immediately says, "John save us." The second one says, "That'll be the football attendance next year if Butch is still around."
It's like it's the same thing as people who comment on it's different, but it's the same. Like people who comment, like if CNN posts something on Facebook, it could be about anything. Like it could be about look at this young boy who saved a giraffe, a captive giraffe or something, and it's Trump and I mean, it's just it all goes political, you know. It's the same thing.
You're right, and these are all they're all fire Butch, fire Butch. Here's another one. A guy wants T. Martin to come in as the offensive coordinator. Another guy's asking why he's not on the phone with Chip Kelly, why he's instead of at this game. But I mean, it's comical. It's so predictable. It's comical, you know.
It is comical that T. Martin's not coming in anytime soon as the offensive coordinator. Maybe if you hire him, if you offer him the head coaching job, he might consider it. But yeah, so that's when you first said that, I thought you were going to say, because all you said was John Kelly was at Regal Stadium for the soccer match. I thought you were going to say John Kelly or John Curry, not John Kelly. I thought you were going to say John Curry had gotten injured too. He fell down the bleachers at the soccer stadium or something.
Well, that's next week, probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that one's at 27. We both had it at, you had 20, I had 21. We thought it would be about a 3-score line, and I guess Vegas has a little more confidence in Tennessee.
Yeah, you're off to a fast start here. You got the first two, but let's go to the second game. Louisiana Tech at South Carolina. We kind of went into South Carolina. They're without Debo Samuel now. That's going to be a big blow. You thought the line would open at 7.5. I predicted 9, and it's South Carolina -10.5. So I got that one.
Okay. Yeah, you set me up for that one. You went straight into that one with the jab there. But that's I didn't know what to think about that one, to be honest with you, because Louisiana Tech just went on the road and beat Western Kentucky, and I think that's a pretty good program win. But of course, they got their doors blown off by Mississippi State, which happens to be an SEC team. But I don't know, man. I just didn't really know what to think about that one because I don't think South Carolina can score quite like Mississippi State. So just a bit of a head scratcher for me. I don't know what to think there.
Yeah, and I think normally this would, had they won that Kentucky game, had a big performance, I think this line would have been a lot bigger. But, you know, I think it's going to take a lot out of them to lose their first game of the year. I think in college football in particular, losing that first game, if you're an SEC program, your chances to win the SEC title diminish significantly. Your chances to win the national title almost go away unless you're in Alabama or Georgia, potentially. So I think it's very deflating. I think they'll come out a little flat, and if they're not careful, they could lose this game. I don't obviously don't I'm not going to predict that, but you know, I think this could be a tight game. They're coached Louisiana Tech by Skip Holtz, I believe. They almost beat Arkansas last year, so they have no fear of an SEC program. So I thought it would be right around 10 points, and here I was only a point and a half off.
And Skip Holtz has spent a little time around South Carolina in his day because, of course, his dad was the head coach there for quite a while. So that could be interesting. Again, I don't know. I got to look into it. Maybe later in the week I'll know more about it. But it's hard for me to say at this point what I'm even thinking on this one. I expect South Carolina to win the game probably, but I don't know about the spread.
Now, I was hoping I could kind of trick you a little bit on this one. Syracuse at LSU. I just recall you had this, I believe you had this as a potential upset in one of your preseason columns.
No, that was Troy over LSU.
Ah, okay. I was even thinking crazier. Of this one.
No, even crazier. An ACC team's not going to beat LSU, but a Sun Belt team might.
So you had it at LSU minus 17. I thought it would be LSU minus 13.5, and it's actually significantly higher than I thought. It's LSU. It opened at LSU minus 23.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I looked into Syracuse. Didn't do a whole lot of research, I'll be honest, but they didn't appear to have any real positive results so far this year. They haven't played anybody close to what LSU is going to bring to the table. So I'm not surprised to see it that high, but I didn't think it would be quite that high just because of, you know, I had LSU's most recent performance in mind too. So,
And one interesting note about Syracuse, one of the few things I know about them this year, I believe they've lost to Middle Tennessee, and Vanderbilt just destroyed Middle Tennessee. So, you know, sometimes looking at a team that way is not that great a way to do it. But that is interesting to me that they lost that game. And I know they're coached by Dino Babers, who he originally comes from Baylor, so he kind of runs the Art Briles system there. And I think if you are not nearly as talented and you're going up against a program that has elite defensive back talent like LSU does, I think this is going to be a very, very tough matchup for Syracuse to make some headway in this one.
Dino needs to be careful up there if he's running the Art Briles system, because that's a pretty dangerous system to run. I don't know, honestly, if this game in particular will be a blowout for LSU. I don't know how good LSU is, and they tend to struggle in games like this. You know, last year, I believe it was Syracuse, they kind of struggled by and finally got it done in the fourth quarter, but I don't know. Syracuse, not very good, but I might, if I could take Syracuse with the points, I might do it.
Yeah, that may be an interesting one, especially coming off, as I mentioned previously, with South Carolina. LSU, their first loss of the season, they might be a bit deflated next week. All right, so here's when the games kind of start to get really interesting here in the SEC this week. Florida is traveling to Kentucky, and you said you thought it would be a 2.5-point spread. I said Florida, 4-point spread. And it is indeed Florida at 4 points on the road at Kentucky.
Well, look at you, just right on it, just nailed it.
That just seemed about right to me. Clearly they have the talent advantage in that game. They're coming off a huge win. They haven't lost to Kentucky in 30 years. There was just no way Kentucky's going to be favored in this game. But I don't think they were going to be anywhere near a touchdown favorite in this matchup.
Let me ask you honestly, though, do you think Kentucky can win this game? I mean, because from what I've seen through 3 weeks, I think Kentucky looks like a better football team.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, I honestly think they should be favored to win this game. But I think a lot, you know, obviously a lot more goes into it than you know, how the matchup suggests. A lot of it is public perception. A lot of it is, you know, the team name. And, you know, I think this should be closer to Kentucky 1 or 2, but, you know, I just had a feeling 4 is the right number here. There's going to be a ton of hype with Kentucky. you know, they just seem a lot, as I mentioned previously, they're much tougher. You know, it's going to be tough for them to I think get a lot of offense on Florida, but I'm not sold on anything Florida can do offensively based on what we just saw in the Tennessee game and clearly in the Michigan opener.
I think with that line, the way that it is at four, I think it's honestly, going back to what you said about the public perception, mm-hmm. I think that that's what it is in this case, because of the fact that you've got that mental thing there, that mental block, where Kentucky hasn't beaten Florida in 30 years, and so who really expects them to do it? It's just a natural that Florida beats Kentucky. It's what always happens. Mm-hmm. I think, Mike, I think if South Carolina were that other team, if you put different uniforms on them and you said, this is South Carolina, except they're going to play Kentucky, I think the line might be a little bit different. I think that Kentucky, in that case, might even be favored.
Yeah, and you know these guys have probably heard this all off season. You know, they heard it plenty at SEC Media Days when I was up there. Every person asked them about it. So this is just something that I think lives with this program, and until they get over it, they're just going to continue to hear it.
Yeah, should be interesting.
And to carry on with that, this next game has somewhat of a similar feel. Texas A&M and Arkansas, and of course that game is annually in Arlington, Texas, so it's a neutral site game. I thought the line would open up around. I thought Arkansas would be a slight edge favorite. I kind of hate the way Texas A&M is playing right now. I thought it would be Arkansas -2. You went the other way, Texas A&M -3, and it is indeed Texas A&M -3.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so you got that one right on the head.
This just makes my night. Every time we do this, every time I get one, it's like Christmas morning, because I'm just totally guessing on most of these. I mean, you know, we try to put in some research and all that kind of stuff, but you never really know what Vegas is going to do, so... yeah, that's fun. So they've got A&M by a field goal. I've got A&M by a field goal. Why did you think that Arkansas might be favored?
Well, I just think, you know, obviously they're going to have an extra week to prepare. They didn't have to play this week. I think that's a slight advantage in Arkansas's favor. I don't think they're quite as bad as people are making them out to be. Obviously, that was not a great performance against TCU. But, you know, somewhat similar to the Tennessee game we just saw, Arkansas had their chances within the 5-yard line and just couldn't punch it in. If they punch it in, you know, two running plays, I mean, they probably win that TCU game. So, and TCU now is, I believe, ranked number 12 in the country. So it's not just – Arkansas is not this terrible team. And just what I've seen from Texas A&M with Kellen Mond as the quarterback, I mean, he's worth about one or two good passes a game, but beyond that, he's not SEC caliber. They're struggling against Lafayette. They're struggling against Nichols. We all saw what happened to UCLA. I don't have any confidence in a Texas A&M team to be a favorite right now.
I will say in the second half, though, in that game, I thought Kellen Mond was pretty impressive. He ended up going for 300 yards, which, you know, I get it. You're playing the Raging Cajuns, so it's kind of a little bit easier to do. But, you know, this game is in Dallas, or Arlington. I always say Dallas. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's just Arkansas never wins this game. And you go back to, you know, perception around Kentucky and Florida. Maybe there's a little perception at stake in this one, because Arkansas does not beat Texas A&M. I mean, Kevin Sumlin, say what you will about him, but he's 5-0 against Arkansas. So, which is another reason why I think, and we'll probably get into this later in the week, but it's another reason I think that the losing coach of this game is going to be in really, really hot water.
Yeah, and I could see that, you know, kind of like we were mentioning with Kentucky and Florida, you know, there's a monkey on the back of Arkansas in this game. But I think another way to look at it, which made me also favor Arkansas, I think Brett Bielema, even though, you know, as strange as this sounds, he's not been able to beat Kevin Sumlin, I think he's a better coach. And I think the players care more, and I think they want to win it for him. And just based on what I've seen with Texas A&M and Sumlin, I'm not saying that I don't want to suggest the players don't like him, but it just seems like they're just ready for this season to end already, and we're not even in October yet. So I really expect Arkansas, you know, just like last year coming off the bye week, they just steamrolled a pretty solid Florida team. I think coming off this bye week, they'll show up, and I think they're going to put Texas A&M away. I expect them to win by double digits in this one.
Interesting. Okay. Well, it should be fun to watch.
All right, another really great game, and this is three in a row, so I kind of tried to knock it out just like this, but this line, I think, has a lot to do with perception as well. Alabama's traveling to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. You thought it would be a 14.5-point spread. I said 16-point spread, and that opened at 18.5 points.
That was one that I just kind of like that Louisiana Tech line. I just really didn't know what to think there, because I think Vanderbilt's defense is good enough that, you know, Alabama, I just didn't know where it would be. I knew it would be somewhere in the teens, but I thought it might be a little closer down to 14.5. So you got me on that one.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the line 18.5 is actually more than Vanderbilt has allowed all season. They've only allowed 13 points. So not to suggest that they're just going to shut down Alabama by any means, but I don't think I've ever seen a line that's higher than a team's actually allowed. You know, I was actually impressed with the Vanderbilt home crowd. I didn't expect many people to show up for the Kansas State game, even though that was a ranked opponent, just judging off the previous week's attendance. And it was a nice atmosphere. This one, obviously, I think there's going to be far more Alabama fans than Vanderbilt, but I think it'll still be a really good environment. There's going to be buzz all week on campus, and I would expect this to actually be a close game heading into the second half. So, you know, anything can happen. I like Vanderbilt here. This is their Super Bowl, you know. So obviously Alabama's not gonna, you know, overlook an undefeated SEC opponent, but I'll just be very, very interested to see how this goes. And I think, you know, regardless of, you know, everyone's gonna be picking Vanderbilt to lose. Derek Mason's is gonna play that up all week, and if he can come together with some game plan to limit that offense. You know, I think if Vanderbilt continues to trend and let's say they go back to a bowl game, I think he's an excellent candidate to get a big-time job. And if he really limits Alabama here, I think that'll be his calling card to get almost any job that's open.
Could you imagine if Vanderbilt beat Alabama? I'm just trying to envision that scenario. To what it would be like,
he would immediately jump ahead of people like Chip Kelly. I think I honestly think that in, you know, all these Bob Stoops, like, I mean, yeah, those are potentially Hall of Fame coaches, but you know, this is a guy that's actually in his prime. He's done it at Vanderbilt. Like, I don't know. I think that would be a more impressive accomplishment than what some of those other guys have achieved.
I think that there could be a possibility here. To be totally honest with you, that this could be a competitive type game. At the same time, though, I don't want to say it's going to be too competitive, because you trust Alabama, you know. Mm-hmm. You trust Nick Saban, you trust that offense to be efficient. But defensively, Alabama has not been at its best. Not like it was in that Florida State game. I mean, Bama giving up 23 to Colorado State, that's really strange for an Alabama defense, although Colorado State, pretty solid offense. But, you know, I think this could be a game maybe close for the first half, maybe Vanderbilt turns a few heads, and eventually I think Alabama probably runs away, something like 31-14 or something like that. But I don't think it's – I don't know that Alabama will cover that 18-point spread.
Yeah, and we still haven't seen their offensive coordinator in an SEC game. We saw him in the Florida State game, and I think most people walked away from that saying, you know, Alabama's offense has a ton of work to do. They were not that impressive. Not to suggest that Vanderbilt has the athletes of Florida State, but they potentially have a better schematic advantage there. If they struggle again, I think there's going to be some serious questions, Mark, with that offense moving forward.
Well, it should be interesting. Anything else you want to talk about as far as these lines go?
Yeah, we got one more game.
Oh, I thought that was the last
No,
one.
this is gonna be this could be a great game. I think College Game Day really missed out on a great opportunity here that I don't know if people have heard, but they're gonna do it live next week from Times Square, New York City, which is, as we all know, full of college football fans. But the biggest game in the SEC this week, Mississippi State, hot off that LSU win, traveling to Athens to take on an undefeated Georgia team. You thought the line would be Georgia minus 1.5. I said Georgia minus 5, and it opened at Georgia minus 6.5. So I got that one, and believe it or not, we tied with 4-4. So we tied this week on the betting the lines.
Man, I'm just failing down the stretch here. I totally well, first of all, I forgot the game was even happening because I thought we'd already picked our last one, but
So, what made you think that line would be so close there?
I think because I am really, really buying Mississippi State. And I've been all in on Mississippi State for really since before the season. So until Mississippi State shows me something, I think they'll win that game.
Really?
I have a really good feeling that Mississippi State can go into Athens and win. I think resume wise, right now, Mississippi State has the better resume. Now, I know you beat Notre Dame on the road. That's a good win. It's fine, but I'm just a lot more impressed by what Mississippi State has done. I think State's defense is probably as good as Georgia's. I think Mississippi State has a better quarterback, obviously, in Nick Fitzgerald, but it's a really interesting matchup because of the offensive playmakers on each side that you've got in that game versus how good those defenses are. It's going to come down to who makes more plays, and I don't know. I like State's quarterback.
Yeah, based on what I've seen on these two teams, I would give the defensive advantage to Georgia. I think they may have the best defense in the SEC, but Mississippi State, based on what we've seen, it can't be far behind. The Georgia offense, I'm still not sold on. So I think this is going to be a huge game. Todd Grantham returning back to his old stomping grounds in Athens. I think sometimes there's a little too much made of stuff like that, but that'll be interesting. That's just another storyline to this game. And if Nick Fitzgerald is seriously going to be a contender for the Heisman, this is a type of game where he's got to show up. And some other people around him have got to help because that defense is just going to be keyed on killing him in this game. And I'll be really interested to see what happens there.
Well, I'm getting ready to go put my life savings down on Mississippi State plus 6. So I really
Well,
didn't
what
think.
about this though? There could be one potential wild card. There's not been any official update, but I think Georgia might be in a bit of a tough spot here. What if Jacob Eason is healthy enough to play? Would you play him in this game?
See, that's tough now because you're coming off, Jake Fromm's got 2 weeks under his belt. He threw three touchdown passes last week, looked pretty good at Notre Dame in Easton's absence. So it's kind of one of those, you put yourself in a situation now. Do you go with the guy you initially started or do you keep the hot hand? It's like Dak Prescott and Tony Romo last year.
Yeah, and I think there's a potential that they could really screw this thing up. Let's say Jake Fromm has a they stick with him and he has a bad game against Mississippi State. They turn around and go to Tennessee and to Vanderbilt the next 2 weeks. I mean, those are potentially two huge games in the SEC East. They follow that up 2 weeks later with Florida, and then 2 weeks later at Auburn. I mean, this is just n not the this is not the stretch to have juggling quarterback. So, I mean, a decision's going to have to be made here soon, and it'll be interesting to see how that affects this team.
It certainly should be. I'm assuming, I would think at this point they would go with Jake Fromm, but I'm not in that locker room, so it's just hard to say. But I'll be anticipating it for sure on next Saturday when those two teams play. Should be a really good football game. So now, Mike, I'll ask you anything else before we get out of here, now that we've gone through all the lines.
No, just next week I gotta figure out how to beat you. This 4-4 tie was somewhat anticlimactic.
So what did we? Did we? What's the overall? Do you have the overall? Have we tied the last couple weeks too?
No, you won the first week. I won the second week. So it's 1-1-1 right now.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it'll all get sorted out as the season goes along. I'll probably falter down the stretch. Don't worry. So, that's usually what happens. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But anyway, I guess that pretty much sums it up here for our 11th episode. So we'll go ahead and get out of here. From Michael Bratton, I'm Cody McClure. Talk to you guys later this week. See ya.